Okay, I'm thinking tonight that we're going to have one row shorter list to be working with as we finish up the topic that you see at the top there, and we had started last week about the passages that deal with kings and rulers and government in general. And that being the case, then some of those are really very close to being worded exactly the same way as some others. You know, we'll probably get through this a little quicker than we did with the first column. It took a whole class. And so I thought I might just you know, find out again how much of a family we are. You know, that, I would be very interested in knowing, quite honestly, how you all, you know, brutally honestly, as I've been asking people to evaluate the readers in our interpretive reading class, on how you feel about the length of the Proverbs class. I started this class in September, and so we are just now in our ninth month of working through Proverbs. Raise your hand if you think it's going too slowly and we should have probably been done by now. It's okay. Okay, we do have some. Okay, and you know, it's a very subjective thing and all of that, but I do need to get a feedback and a feel for the general sense of it. I don't believe I have ever taught the Book of Proverbs in less than what would be equivalent, I guess, of two semesters, you know, in a school system, which is 9 months. And so it's just such an amazing book, and a full book. It's the epitome of all wisdom. It's the repository of, you know, wisdom itself, a preeminent book, I guess, of wisdom literature, in fact. And so it's always hard for me to get through it any faster. That maybe is my problem. Carol?
Well, I think that if you tried to squeeze it shorter, which you probably could have done, you would have been rushing, and I don't think as people here we would have felt comfortable talk about how it relates to us, so I think it helps with the
interaction. Well, thank you very much for that, because, and I think last week was a perfect case, you know, in point. I thought, well, we'll get through all those verses. That's not that many verses, you know, in a single class. And we got through exactly half of it. Well, there was a lot of feedback, a lot of engagement and interaction, which I really appreciate, as long as you do. You know, and so I should say, well, you know, wish we just could march through this faster. Let me know, because I have to develop a sense of where the congregation is and what your attitudes are and how you're feeling about the material, so please never hesitate. But that's kind of a lead-in to what's going to happen. You know, we have our summer series starting there at the end of June. 26th, I think, is the first day that's going to start. And so we're going to be heading into kind of a new semester right there, if you will, at that time anyway, summer starting. And so I'm thinking to wrap this up in that length of time. What that means is we would have, well, I didn't count, but it'd be three or four, you know, more sessions in the Proverbs, and then we'll be done. But if I do that, then there really will be a fair amount of material that we're not going to look at. Now, I haven't actually, you know, counted the verses, but my sense is that it would certainly be 10% of the book that we will not have looked at all. And it might be as much as 20% of the book that, you know, actual verses that we would not have considered. And so I would just have you think about that. If you have any off the top of your head thoughts about that, let me know now. The elders and I have not discussed this, you know, in great detail. I don't recall or remember anyway, but my intention was to finish, you know, for the summer here. The Book of Proverbs, being of the nature that it is, would allow us, if there was some kind of great groundswell, you know, hysteria that we, you know, we needed to pick it up again, you know, later. But it would be, you know, 2 months later. And so, I mean, kind of a quandary right there. I think it would be an adequate treatment of the book, you know, certainly, but it's not going to be a very comprehensive treatment of the book if we leave, say, 15 or 20% of it kind of on the table. So give us your feedback on that. Let me know about that. Let the elders know about that. If it's time to bring Proverbs to an end, you know, then great. And then the one last thing I might ask is, how many of you would feel very strongly that we should have at least one session on that worthy woman? Because typically, once you get her involved, there goes our 4 weeks, you know, just like that. And so there's kind of a breaking point in there too as to whether or not we want to actually, you know, get involved with that. And you recall, we looked at a lot of passages about women, both evil women and good women, in separate lessons, but we didn't actually go through that last chapter line for line. And so let me know how you feel about that as well. So we can go either way on whether or not we're going to take that up. If we do, we're only going to have one night on it, you know, for sure. So get that feedback to me tonight or, you know, certainly by Sunday as I've got to make some major decisions now on which topics we are going to be dealing with, you know, what's going to happen if we bring this to a close for the 26th. Okay, any initial comments or questions on that? All right, great. Then let's go ahead and plow into the book. We are talking about kings slash rulers slash government slash anybody that's in a position of authority, which to some extent might really be excellent advice for parents. Parents have a ruling position over their children. So I didn't mention that last week, but I want to put that out for you too, that this is not necessarily just advice that you should think of as exclusively geared toward how I might relate to my local government, but might also be advice, or certainly in some passages would contain advice for the sake of parents as well as you're learning how to work with your children. Now, in chapter 23, and in the first three verses, when you sit down to dine with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you in the New American Standard, and put a knife to your throat if you are a man of appetite. Do not desire his delicacies, for it is deceptive food. Very curious passage. In the first place, who's the ultimate ruler at this time? Well, the writer of the book. Yeah, exactly. It's Solomon here that we're talking about. So when he says, excuse me, when you sit down to dine with a ruler, it's deceptive food, sounds like kind of a curious thing to say about yourself, doesn't it? Well, I imagine he's extending that, you know, toward all rulers. And in Solomon's kingdom, he had quite a few layers of rulers. And as a matter of fact, we even get some data in the Old Testament about the structure of his kingdom. There are some verses about, you know, the layers and how he had organized various geographical layers.
Doesn't it bring to mind Daniel refusing the delicacy of Nebuchadnezzar?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, yeah, it brings to mind Daniel, who refused, of course, that food, as it was going to be a direct threat to his faithfulness before his God and his purity under the law. And so, you know, certainly he was being offered a delicacy that was going to be a major problem, it would just say the least there. And so, maybe at first blush, you know, we would think, I don't know any rulers anyway, do you? You know, in the sense of kings, and Daniel had a problem that I'm not likely to have, but quite a few people in the Bible did. But, you know, all of us, at some point or another, are going to be dealing with some kind or another of authorities. And so it may be that we'll find ourselves, you know, making some friends or having some relationships and bearing in mind that when you do, rulers, Solomon is telling us, if I'm reading this properly, because I'm trying to take it in its most general sense, not that he's talking about a specific individual, you know, but rulers, let's say, are operating at more than one level. You know, anybody that acquires a position of power and authority is still the same person they always were. And they still have friends, and they still have family. And so if one of these days, to the sudden surprise and shock, you know, of my family and everybody in the room right here, you know, they should come to me like they did with Jesus and force me to be king. I've been moving in fear of this for years, you know. But if something happens somehow, you know, and I wind up in a position of authority, do you suppose that would change our relationship? It's going to change the relationship. Suppose that next week, the position of authority that I occupy is that, you know, let's suppose that some disaster has happened, we lose half the congregation in an explosion. And by the way, here's something for you to remember and be praying about. I think very few of you would know this. Remember a couple of weeks ago, the explosion in the town of West in Texas? Did you know that that plant was owned and operated by a member of the church who is an elder in that community? It's owned by a member of the church. Lawsuits are flying everywhere. The man, by all accounts, is as honest a guy as you could ever imagine, and he's in his 80s. And so now he's devastated. I think 12 people have been killed, you know, in the event. They don't know what did it. There are three possibilities. Remember they had the report come out, and they said, we honestly don't know. We can think of three different ways this could happen, and there's not enough evidence. It's been vaporized, you know, to know what it is. So we don't know if it was done intentionally by somebody. We don't know if it was the batteries in the golf cart. Remember, we don't know if it was an electrical fault. There are those three options. But anyway, I only learned day before yesterday, I guess it was, must have been Monday, that there was an elder of the church that's involved there. And, of course, his entire family and the whole city has just been devastated, a little village, I guess. But anyway, you know, might keep them in your prayers. It appears that they're just as innocent as anybody could be, but here in their 80s, in their lives, you know, just been destroyed. So, remember them. But my point was, is that suppose some event like that goes down, and now we've had a bunch of fatalities. You know, we've got issues in the city government and all that. I think the town only had 2,800 people. And suppose they make me the building inspector, and you're building a house. Well, now I'm your friend, the preacher, and I'm the building inspector, and I have to come out and inspect your house. Is that going to be awkward? Yeah, it is. That's going to be awkward. It introduces automatically an element that neither one of us are going to like, you know, and so not that either one of us would behave improperly, that either one of us would expect something from the other party, but, you know, suddenly we're in a different relationship. And to some degree now, as a building inspector, I have power over you. And so, and you're depending and looking to me, you know, for some help. And so you find yourself sitting down with a ruler, because I invite you over for dinner while your permit's pending. Okay, well, this passage, you know, suggests at least that rulers have to operate on two different levels. He's introduced a very heavily freighted word, deceptive food. But let me ask you a really loaded question, so you'll already know, you know, the end from the beginning here. Is deception necessarily a bad thing? Is it 100% of the time evil? Okay, an awful lot of board games are going to be no more played by Christians, you know, if you can't bluff, you know, if you can't employ some deception. Now, obviously, first and foremost, the word would speak of a sin. You're doing something deceitful, you know, a deception in that manner. But let's take it up a few notches. If you're a ruler who is involved in a capacity as a police officer, are there any police officers who are Christians? Well, there's loads of them. And I told you, I had one close personal friend. I got a letter from the family this week. They're in Boise, Idaho. SWAT team member, guy who did a presidential detail to protect Bill Clinton some years back. Here's a guy out in the community. Really close personal friend of mine, going back to when he and I shared an apartment in 1975, was an ambulance driver in the town that he was preaching in, which, like West, only had a couple of thousand people in it. Okay? And so, various kinds of calls come in, and one night he went out on the ambulance and had to pick up a member of the church who was staggeringly drunk. Now what have we got? We've got all kinds of issues, you know, that have cropped up now. But what I'm trying to get into here, you know, is to get us to the point where a ruler who is in a necessary position of being a judge or a police officer or a host of other occupations where the purpose of the job is to ferret out truth in their culture and society might use a dinner and then set it up with certain conversational, you know, ploys, if you will, to try to learn the truth. Now, if this guy's not a personal friend, What is Solomon telling you right here when you get this invitation, you know, to this ruler, and you sit down to this banquet spread, and your eyes are kind of bugging out, you know, you never did have that lobster Newburgh before, a pretty, you know, great meal, and so what is he saying? Yes, he's saying, keep your wits about you, because there may be a hidden agenda, okay? So don't get swept away by the circumstances. Be careful when you find yourself in these circumstances. Now, he's been teaching us, you should be careful in each and every circumstance. But now, here's the ultimate ruler, the king himself, and a guy who knows a little bit about trying to determine who's telling the truth and who's not. Like, why don't we cut that baby in half over there? Seems like a good idea. You know, you're working on things. What did Solomon do when he said, cut the baby in half? What was that? That's right, but I mean, what was the strategy that he employed?
Bring the truth out.
Yes. It's my fault. I'm not asking the question right now, you know, properly. Was that not a deception? He wasn't going to kill that baby, was he? I don't think so. He'd come down a couple of pegs in my wisdom rankings, you know, if he actually killed the kid. You know, so it was a deception, wasn't it? Pure and simple. And it worked. He figured out who the mother was. And we've been commending him for it ever since. That lying, cheating, you know, deceptive guy pulled the wool over everybody's eyes, and we're commending him for it. Because it's not a sin what he did. Okay?
Well, the way I took that particular verse was, if you look at our political system where the person serves at the pleasure of the president, and you're a member of the cabinet, don't get used to the food at the president's table because it's deceptive, then you could be there tomorrow. I mean, it's like your position is false.
Tenuous, yeah. Okay. And again, that's a great idea. I hadn't thought about that, but it certainly fits the verse perfectly. Okay? Don't get used to this is another way of saying keep your wits about you. You don't want to be misled in these circumstances. And so that's what I'm gathering out of this. Now, I want to point out there's also a translation difficulty here. And so as I was reading, remember I said in the New American Standard, in the second line of verse 1, the New American Standard translates it what? But you may note there's a footnote. It could equally be translated who. So think about the who now. When you sit down to dine with a ruler, consider carefully who is before you. And put a knife to your throat if you're a man of appetite. Do not desire his delicacies, for it is deceptive food. So keep your wits about you again, but it's a little more focused, I think, than not so much, you know, consider what's on your plate, but what was he saying? You know, think about the circumstances, the individual that you're facing, and be aware here that things may not be what they seem. This may not be exactly what, you know, you think it is. Now, I've got to tell you, the fatal time I deceived somebody who was in a minor position of authority, but many, many years ago, it's been over 20 years ago, I was regularly writing ads in the newspaper that were rather controversial, and I'd made somewhat of a name for myself in the community with, you know, doctrinal discussions that were pointing out religious errors and whatnot. And then the local newspaper decided that for the first time ever, they were going to start a series on local preachers, and they wanted to feature me in I think it was a half-page article, you know, in the newspaper as the first guy they were going to interview. So I thought, well, okay, you know, that's fine. So they went and met with a reporter, and they made up this whole article, you know, and then they printed it in the paper. Now, everything's fine. Nice long article, you know, they quote me fairly, you know, and all the rest of that, and go through the whole thing, you know, and then I get down at the bottom, and in bold print, they identified me as Larry Haverstock, pastor of the Smoky Point Community Church. And it's, you know, you've all had your sense of how accurate reporters are anyway, you know, and in this case, not paying attention to what they're doing, this reporter has just identified me by name as the pastor of a church that was less than a quarter of a mile down the road from us. and who had just been caught in adultery with one of the members of his congregation. It was a huge scandal all over the city, and he's just identified me as that guy. Now, how do I feel about it? This is not good. I get a half page and see how it turns out. So I walked into the guy's office, and I said to him, first words out of my mouth, "How would you feel if I identified you as a Nazi?" And what happened next? I had his full attention, and he was mad. You know, and then I proceeded to explain, "You have just identified me as a scandalous adulterer in a neighboring congregation less than a quarter mile away. You have ruined my reputation in this article, or at least, you know, for the rumor mill, who don't know me and know him, you know, you've made me out to be this guy." Well, at that point, his anger turned from what to what? "Whoa! So sorry! You get to write the next article." So I wrote a whole article on the difference between a preacher and a pastor. Okay. And a couple other points. And straightened that mess out and had total free reign. And at the end, you know what? I was the preacher for the Smoky Point Church Christ this time around. Not that guy at all. But my point is, you know, and again, there's so many different ways that somebody can be your ruler. So it's very general information. It starts off at the top with the king, but not too many people get to be that, and not too many people get to kneel with it. So as we're looking at these verses, take it all the way down, you know, to your life, and when you're dealing with the traffic cop, or you're dealing with, you know, the building inspector, or whoever it is that comes to mind, but just be aware that when you're in these circumstances, things might be a test. How many times does the Bible tell us that God did things to Israel as a test to see if they were faithful? Okay? That's still happening. All right? All right, Bill.
Another case that comes along, it's come a little later in the Bible, that is ruler of ruler, basically. When Hezekiah had to deal with the illness, and another ruler sent emissaries to him to congratulate him on his healing, he was unwisely and overly willing to show them all the treasures of his kingdom, and it cost him dearly.
Okay. Wasn't being careful.
Yeah.
Joseph's brothers show up, and what's he doing with the sacks that he sent them home with? Major deception going on here. No sin involved, but major deception, and a whole lot of testing taking place as well. So, you know, great lesson for all of us right here to be careful not only what you're looking at, so don't get the big eyes because you got a big spread or something, but also who you're looking at, you know, and the circumstances here, and don't worry, don't let the food kind of deceive you. Okay, so enough on that one. The next one over here, chapter 24, verses 21 and 22. Now, 21 of the next chapter, 24. "My son, fear the Lord and the king. Do not associate with those who are given to change, for their calamity will rise suddenly, and who knows the ruin that comes from both of them." Now, on this one, I again have to leave it to you, and maybe, you know, somebody here can help me. I have a really hard time understanding exactly what Solomon was doing here. Because in verse 21 he says, "Fear the Lord and the king." Now, at that point, I have no problem. I know what he said to do. I want you to fear the Lord, and I want you to fear the king. We're told in both of these in many places in Scripture, Old Testament and New, and so, you know, I've got no problem with that. But then he says, "Do not associate with those who are given to change." Is that a third category? So, fear the Lord, fear the king, and don't associate with these other guys, not the Lord or the king. Certainly the Lord's not subject to change, but the king might be. You know, but people who are subject to change might be a third group of people that he's now warning me about. Or was he intending the second part of verse 21 to be, here's a fancy word for you grammatically, an appositive? Any grammar teachers here who knows what an appositive is? A positive. Okay, what it means is you say something and then the appositive will follow. An appositive is a grammatical structure in which you use different words to say the same thing. You're describing what you just talked about. So what I'm saying is this could be an appositive. And the Lord and the King that he's warned you about are then included here with do not associate with those who are given to change. Well, rightly, we'd take the Lord off the table on that, but it would be another way of describing the King. Or is it a third category? I don't know how to resolve that dilemma. And we'll see, it's not going to make a big difference here, but you need to know about it. Go ahead, Bill.
Society, in large part, the so-called Christian churches today are willing to change to go with social whims rather than sticking with Scripture. They're subject to change. We, and those of us who believe that follow the King and our God, should not be subject to change.
Amen to that. You know,
hang on to what we know is right.
See, and exactly, that's where I would be looking at it as a third category rather than an appositive. But I just, again, want to set it before you so you're aware there's very different ideas that are attached to this. So you just want to think about it, think it through both ways. But ultimately, when we're done here, see the finish. Their calamity will rise suddenly, and who knows the ruin that comes from both of them. Well, the king can have a calamity rise suddenly if he's an evil king. If he's a king that is given to change, his calamity will arise suddenly. If the king is separated from the people that are given to change, you know, it can go either way. But the point is, you don't want to be associated there, and you do want to be appropriately afraid because their calamity arises suddenly, and who knows the ruin that comes from both of them. If you're associating with both of them and their calamitous ruin comes, you're associated, then what happens? See, you're going down too. This whole IRS scandal thing, you know, been very interesting to watch these last few days. In any government, you know, at the get-go, the head's got to roll. Somebody's going to have to be sacrificed. Before we even decide if any wrongdoing was done, we're going to have to fire somebody. You know, that's the way it works. So, you know, they started firing people. You never heard of them. And they got into the court there, you know, and Lerner had to take the fifth and all that, you know. So what is happening? Well, something went wrong, and when it did, all the associates now are watching dominoes fall, aren't they? You know, and everybody's getting worried, how far is this thing going to go? It's Eric Holder's on the line now, you know, and so everybody's wondering, how far is this thing going to go? So there's that advice. Okay, you had a hand up there, Jack? Nope. Okay. Over here, Bruce.
Any of these proverbs, I think, fit Jeroboam coming up. And that Solomon knows that a movement that goes the way that Jeroboam did with a change of the religion. Jeroboam didn't do it all by himself. There was a lot of people leaning that way. And I think that he's maybe warning about an immediate problem there. Of course, it still fits today.
Yeah, again, a great point. To what degree Solomon might have had foreknowledge of the coming split of the kingdom with his death, you know, how old he is right here and all that, we really can't know. But you've made a great point. He might be aware. And sure enough, the very thing Bill was talking about a moment ago and you're mentioning now is that they're going to be changing an awful lot of things when we start building calves up in Dan. Okay, it's going to be bad. Okay, now Carol.
I lean towards that it's a third party that has a different opinion than the King of the Lord, and I think if you put the first line of the first verse and the second line of the second verse and read them together, for my son, fear the Lord and the King. And who knows the ruin from both of them? In other words, if you go against them because you have these new ideas and they rise to the top and whatever, who knows the ruin that comes your way because you're going against the Lord and the king.
You know, that's a great point. I really like the structure you put together there. I think most of you were able to hear, but a very short recap. What Carol is saying is that you should fear the Lord and the king, because of all the power that they have. Then, after establishing that fact, he introduces a third group of people. And with the third group, just don't associate with them, which should almost come in then as a contrast. Don't fear those guys. Don't be worried about those guys. Don't even want to associate with those guys. For their calamity will rise suddenly, and who knows the ruin that comes from both the Lord and the king, is what Carol's suggesting right there. And it does. It flows pretty well then. And ultimately, again, when you have these issues, I introduce you to them. I want you to think about them. You know, there's food for thought that will give you a depth of understanding if you work these problems. But in the end, there's always going to be an overriding understanding that's pretty obvious. And what is obvious right here is that simple statement, get away from people who are subject to change. Again, I mean, I've told you this story, and I can't remember in 10 months I've told a lot of stories, so if I have, you know, my apologies. But one of the highest compliments I think I was ever paid in my life was by a guy I had not seen in something like a decade. And he called me out of the blue. We were on the phone, you know, talking, and just, he and I had been roommates in the Army. We shared a little two-man room. And so he called me up after 10 years or more. What are you doing? How's it going on, you know? And I wondered how you're faring. And so I told him, and then he asked me about my religion. And so, you know, I told him, because he was lying on his bunk in the dark the day that I was baptized. And he and I both still remember my walking quietly into the room thinking he might be asleep, you know, so I real quiet got on my bunk, realized he was awake, and so, you know, we were just both lying there staring at the ceiling, and suddenly I said, Denny, I got baptized today. And he went, huh. That was about the most, you know, of the conversation. But he calls me 10 years later, and he asks me what I'm doing. And I said, I'm doing exactly the same thing I was doing that night. And he said, you know what? You're the only guy I know that still is. So everybody, they go through one religion after another. They go through one philosophy after another. They go through one wife after another. They go going through everything. He said, you're the only guy I know that's consistent. It was quite a compliment, wasn't it? That's the changeableness that Solomon is condemning here in this verse. When you know the truth, there shouldn't be a whole lot of changing going on unless you're getting better, you know, closer to it. Okay? But you're still, you know, a Christian. You're still taking care of business morally, as were the Jews back in the Old Testament. Okay, I need to pick up the pace here, I guess, but food for thought in all of those. 25 now, verses 2 through 7, bearing in mind that even though I did it in this format, it's just a dash, they really are standalone verses, not just trying to save space in this case. But chapter 25, verse 2, it is the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings is to search out a matter. Now this goes to some of the discussion we had earlier. The king's responsibility is to figure it out. And what is he figuring out? He is figuring out crime and punishment. He's figuring out what some possible warrior enemy king all over the horizon might be thinking. He's thinking about a tremendous number of things. The king's business is to ferret this out, to search out the matter and figure out what's going on very many levels. So, his business is to uncover everything. The purpose of the king is to see that there's no concealing left done. Whose business is it to conceal things? That's God's business. He's got a lot of business that you're never going to understand. It wouldn't help you and it wouldn't help anybody else. There are things that will forever be a mystery. This is where faith comes in the first place, is having that confidence and trust when you don't know what's going on, when it doesn't make any sense. Things don't seem to add up. But, you know, God has been proven true. You're going to trust him anyway. So verse 2, very interesting. It's the glory of God to conceal a matter. Not knowing a given thing is no strike against God. That's his providence. But the glory of kings is to be an investigative, you know, kind of an individual. Get to the bottom of the matter and find out what's going on. Now, 3 is very standalone. As the heavens for height and the earth for depth, so the heart of kings, no, it's very plural here, is unsearchable. So here's Solomon making a very wise observation. If you go in to dine with a king, or you appear before his judgment seat, or you're just simply seeing that last law that he just passed, being nailed up, you know, in the town square, here's the latest decree from the king. As soon as you read it, you know whether the king's right or wrong, don't you? See, was there ever a law that you didn't immediately know whether it was wise or foolish? We all have an opinion. You know, so immediately we weigh in. Well, that's just stupid. Is it? What do you know about the business of the king? What do you know about the database that came to him before he made that decision? What do you know about the heart of the king? Nothing. Okay? So, how many pronouncements of judgment do you think you ought to be making on that king? Probably not too many, huh? Probably not too many. So, be careful, because this is the nature of the game, and look at the nature of the game. As the heavens for height and the earth for depth, so the heart of kings is unsearchable. Unsearchable, even. See? These kinds of verses that, you know, are, I think, really important in a free society above all others. Because we've got the right to weigh in on how stupid the law is. We all know we're smarter than all the politicians put together. But wait a minute. You know, what about this? What about that? What about, you know, this other? And I'll give you one example. For 4.5 years, I worked with a custom home building company. So for 4.5 years, and I think it was 45 projects, you know, we built custom homes. So with 45 houses, what am I dealing with every day for 4.5 years? Building codes. Okay? So what did myself as a carpenter and everybody else on the job do all day long while we were building houses? Complain about building codes and how stupid they are and how much more we know about things than they do. Okay? And I was a very young man. I was only 23, I guess. You know, I'm a very young man, so I'm weighing in with, you know, Paul. I forget who says this, but it's one of my favorite sayings. He led in with a statement by saying, and so he was speaking about another individual, and he said, so with all the confidence of the ignorant, he said, I thought it was such a great line, I'm trying to remember that. You know, the ignorant are always so totally sure about everything. Okay, well, this was back in the early 80s, and I'm involved in these building, no, the last half of the 70s, and I'm involved in all these building projects and everything. And then I remember a series of earthquakes coming through. And how the houses that had the new building codes that we were complaining about were what? Still standing. And the ones that we thought we knew so much better about had pancakes. And then I'm going, well, maybe if I built that house for me, complaining from foundation to roof, you know, that I might have appreciated those building codes then. See? Because kind of like the heart of the kings, Tommy must know a whole lot about weight bearing and lateral shift movements in an earthquake. Probably not a whole lot. And I know about that much about politics, too. So, heavens for height, earth for depth. The heart of kings is unsearchable. Maybe we ought to accept that. Take away the dross from the silver, and there comes out a vessel for the smith. Take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness. What is it upon which the foundation is built for the king? Long-lasting, you know, peace in the kingdom. Righteousness. Get rid of the wicked. Okay? 6. Do not claim honor in the presence of the king, and do not stand in the place of great men. For it is better that it be said to you, come up here, than that you should be put lower in the presence of the prince whom your eyes have seen. Ring any bells? Anybody else ever say anything like that? Sure. So if you don't have a note, that will be found in Luke chapter 14 and verses 7 through 11. Not unique, not original with Jesus. It's essentially just a paraphrase of Proverbs 25 in Luke chapter 14, verses 7 through 11. Pretty self-explanatory, so I'm not going to work on that. Okay, let's go to chapter 28. 28:2. By the transgression of a land, many are its princes, but by a man of understanding and knowledge, so it endures. Okay? Now here, brethren, I think Solomon authorizes us to venture a little bit of those pronouncing judgments, you know, against kings. If you see a nation that just has a very high turnover in rulers, what does this say you have a valid reason to conclude?
It's not stable, but it's not.
Well, you're right, absolutely. It's not stable. But what is he telling us is the reason?
People.
You've got to kind of read it in reverse here. It's sort of reverse psychology. If, well, maybe not. The first part of verse 2 is what I'm getting. I'm sorry, I'm messing it all up. By the transgression of a land, many are its princes. So if you have a lot of princes, what do you have a lot of? Transgression. There you go, I straightened it out finally. But, you know, that's the deal. If you're watching a nation that has the instability that Ron just mentioned, what you're looking at, Solomon says, is a lot of transgression. You're looking at a lot of sin here. Okay? And he's just taught us in the preceding verses, if you want to establish that, you do it on righteousness and by getting rid of the wicked. If you got a lot of turnover, then probably there's a bunch of graft and bribery and corruption of every kind, you know, and you're just turning over and turning over. So, you know, be aware. Now, in verses 15 and 16, so I hope I'm covering that mic well enough. It's not terrible to you, but in verses 15 and 16 in chapter 22, like a roaring lion and a rushing bear is a wicked ruler over a poor people. A leader who is a great oppressor lacks understanding, but he who hates unjust gain will prolong his days. Well, you see again why we can go faster now, because he just told us three different ways that if you hate unjust gain, then you're promoting the righteousness and the stability of your kingdom. You're likely, you know, to stay longer if that's the case. So a bad king, a wicked ruler, has all the sensibilities of a roaring lion and a rushing bear, which is what kind of sensitivity? Just none. So they're out there pillaging the country and producing instability as well. All right, so that was pretty self-evident. Let's go on into chapter 29, where we've got the longest string in a single chapter. And in chapter 29, verse 2, when the righteous increase, the people rejoice. But when a wicked man rules, people groan. It's what you call tautology. It's just so obvious, you know, it doesn't need a comment. And so in verse 4, the king gives stability to the land by justice, but a man who takes bribes overthrows it. Now, this is why we do get so distressed when we catch politicians busted, you know, with, what was the one a few years ago that had, what was it, $200,000 in his refrigerator? All the jokes about cold cash, remember? Okay. So he gets busted with all, it was a freezer, I guess, you know, open top freezer. And, you know, but, you know, yeah, the guy was in it for the bribes. Does he probably realize how far-reaching his influence was according to this verse? He's bringing instability to the land. The guy has an impact. He goes far beyond just himself. He's a threat to you and me. He's a threat to the whole country. This is why you don't want to pile these guys up around you and you have much sympathy for them. This is why the king, if he wants to have a stable government, is going to get rid of them. Because this thing impacts a lot of people, not isolated. Verse 12. If a ruler pays attention to falsehood, all his ministers become what? Oh! If you don't do what the first verses tonight we're talking about, it is the glory of the king to what a matter? To search it out. That's the king's glory. Find the truth. That's your job. Truth, righteousness, justice. That's why God says that he gave those guys the job. Now, they're going to answer for it personally, but the influence is far-reaching. If a ruler pays attention to falsehood, what's he training all his ministers to be? False. He's creating it. You've got to root it out. So in our system, hopefully, you know, next voting cycle, if they don't get jailed first, you know, get rid of them. 14. If the king judges the poor with truth, his throne will be established. How long? Whoa, that's pretty long-lasting, but we've seen it before. So go to 26. Many seek the ruler's favor, but justice for a man comes from... See? So you're seeking the ruler's favor. You want a ruling from the king. You want him to rule in your, you know, regard, in your favor. Go fine. But if all along, brethren, you never had a prayer for your God, if all along your confidence was not in him that things would be okay, then what? See, you got problems. And so he's trying to teach us here, and a lot, you know, that's been set before us about the nature of kings and their business and how much we know about it and all the rest of that. You know, but his point is, in the verse, if I could give you a paraphrase, whose favor should you be seeking? Seek it from the Lord. Seek the Lord's favor. And then justice comes. That's what you're looking for. Okay? Now, let's go on in chapter 30 and verses 29, 30, and 31. There are three things which are stately in their march, even four which are stately when they walk. The lion, mighty among beasts, and does not retreat before any. The strutting cock, the male goat also, and a king when what? How many of these parades have you seen in North Korea? How many of these parades have you seen in China? How many of these parades have you seen in the good old US of A? You know, this is the nature of the game. And so here we are. I made a big joke tonight as we were pulling in. Donna was driving. I was in the passenger seat and went right past the front bumper of the D'Ambrosius. And I went like this while I was going by. And I asked him when I got out, did you see my regal wave? Didn't I look just like a king? He was afraid. Right there. Okay. Well, see, that's it. When you got all your pomp and circumstance, then what? I've got all the honor of a goat and a chicken. Remember that. People are giving you all the tributes and everything, you know, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I believe in, you know, honor where honor is due. And so, you know, certainly we should have our parties every once in a while, recognize the people among us, you know, we love our people. So have your birthday party, you know, whatever else you want to do. But remember this too, you know, that ultimately that good king, he's more concerned about justice and righteousness. Okay? Searching out the matter to get to the truth. And if so, then should he be pompous or humble? Well, he wouldn't be very righteous if he was pompous. If he's arrogant and conceited, he's a sinner, you know, himself. And he ought to be a humble guy. A humble king is the best kind, you know, that there is, best kind of ruler that there is as well. So he, well, you know, a little series of verses right there. I'm trying to start to think like he's pretty important, you know, to remember. You got the lion, yeah, and boy, he didn't retrieve anybody. Now give him full march, you know, that's great. But then you also got, you know, it's not exactly the king of the beast down there too. And so stately in their march is not really all that big a deal now, is it? Okay? And we'll close out with chapter 31. All right, it's perfect. 5 minutes. So, 31, of course, we always remember as not just the last chapter in the book, but starting in verse 10, that whole discussion about the excellent woman or wife. All right, but look at the first nine verses. The words of King Lemuel, the oracle which his mother taught him. What, O my son? And what, O son of my womb? And what, O son of my vows? Do not give your strength to women, or your ways to that which destroys kings. It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, or for rulers to desire strong drink, lest they drink and forget what is decreed, and pervert the rights of all the afflicted. Give strong drink to him who is perishing, and wine to him whose life is bitter. Let him drink and forget his poverty, and remember his trouble no more. Open your mouth for the dumb, for the rights of all the unfortunate. Open your mouth, judge righteously, and defend the rights of the afflicted and needy. Now that mama knew what she was talking about, didn't she? Happy Mother's Day. You know, if you got a queen like that in your kingdom. Now, with 2 minutes to go, again, I don't think we really need to develop this a whole lot. It's the longest series of verses about kings. It gives us the mother's advice, the queen mother's advice, on how to be a great king. It's also something of a summary of everything that we've just been looking at. But it did mention one pitfall here at the very beginning that we hadn't seen before. Do not give your strength to women or your ways to that which destroys kings. If kings ever had a problem, what is it that mama puts at the top of the list? If many people seek the favor of the king, see, and about 98% of them are going to be women first, because marrying a king, it's good to be queen. Okay? And so look out for this, O king, my son, because, you know, ferreting out that truth, by the way, we've had three ferrets in the course of our lives as parents, and so you're going to hear that word a lot. I can tell you all about ferrets if you want to know. But you know, if a king is going to be well-trained, he's also going to be impervious to being abused and used. He's not going to let anything go to his head. He's not going to take all that flattery and all that stuff, you know, really think that any of it's for real. And he's going to take mom's advice, then he's going to recognize you are about to be assailed, O king that has just come to the throne, you know, with just legions of women looking to have your favor and to become queen. So it is not wise. Don't give your strength to women or your ways to that which destroys kings. Don't drink wine or strong drink. Just don't drink. And then, I may have a whole session on alcohol. That's one of those decisions I've got to make in the next few weeks. And if we do that, you know, well then, we'll come back to this again. So I'm not just going to go lightly here now. I've got 30 seconds left. But whole big discussion, you know, about alcohol in your life. And whatever, you know, your conclusion is, when you get to a position of power and authority, then what does this appear to suggest? At that point, you become a teetotaler, don't you? Now it's time to say, okay, I'm done. Now, I'm about justice. I'm about righteousness. I'm about searching, you know, out the truth. I am about the needs of the afflicted and the poor. This is my job to search out a matter. This all being the case for intellectual pursuits, then that which clouds my intellect is probably not a good idea. Take mama's advice, even if you're not a prince. Probably pretty sound advice. Okay? Comment or question? Thank you. Comment or question? All right. Appreciate your attention. John.